ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरुपरिं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीम् राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं भजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Continuing with our ironic discussions of pilgrimage while we're all under virtual house arrest. But we can go on pilgrimage by the mind also. There is, it's also called Manas Tirtha, but I'll discuss that a little later, but that's another kind of tirtha, mental tirtha. But we can remember the holy places. Just I was chanting the Nama Srishtam Manamapi Shatiputra Maturim Goshtavitim, the pasturing grounds of Mathura Mandal, Radhakund. If you think of Radhakund, you can't help but think of Shamakund. So mentally we can go there. Giriraj, Govardhan, Girivaram. And ultimately think of Krishna. He is the Tirtha. He takes us over. He's the means and the end. We want to go to Krishna, and he kindly takes us over, and he arranges in so many ways, holy places to help us go. So I've been speaking about different kinds of holy places within Vedic culture, or to be more precise nowadays, we should say Hindu culture. It's actually more precise because it's more precise because it's imprecise. If you say Hindu, it can mean anything. Vedic, well, there are different opinions about what the word Vedic means. Some people, actually most outside of Srila Prabhupada's followers, they take Vedic to mean pertaining specifically only to the original four Vedas. Hindu culture is derived from the broader Vedic culture with lots of mixing in of all kinds of different things. Anyway, there are different kinds of pilgrimage in the sense that there are different gods are central in different places of pilgrimage, just like in Puri I mentioned. Lord Shiva is there, but it's definitely a Vaishnava pilgrimage place. I don't know if anyone goes to Puri specifically to visit the Shiva temples there. Maybe there are such people. And probably many of the pilgrims who go there Well, I don't know. You don't see any crowds at the Shiva temples. So probably only the local people go there. In Vrindavan, actually, Vrindavan is obviously a place of pilgrimage for Vaishnavas, but your first thing you're supposed to go is to go to which Mahadev? Bhuteshwar? Supposed to offer obeisance to him first, because he's the Shiva, he's the protector of the Dham. But again, nowadays I don't know how many people do these things. Anyway, there are different holy places which are generally called Shaiva, and many of the Shaiva places are also places of Shakti worship. They're major places of Shiva worship and also major places of Shakti worship. Well, the Shakti Pitams are often in places which are actually better known for Shiva worship, like Sri Shailam, Kanchi. There's even supposed to be one in Vrindavan, I saw. I never heard of that before. Someone put on some list. We worship in Vrindavan the Adi Shakti, Purna Shakti, Sri Radha. It's actually a place of Shakti worship. Because those who are really, really deeply into Vrindavan, they know that it's the place of Radha. It's not incorrect to call Krishna Vrindavaneshwar. I never heard him being called that. There is Vrindavanatha. That name comes up in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's Phalashruti to his Gurvashtaka, which we sing the Gurvashtakam every morning, not the Phalashruti. The Phalashruti says that if one chants this daily during the Brahma Muhurta, Prayatnad, Brahma Muhurte Patati Prayatnad, Tameva Vrindavana Nata Sakshat Sevaiva Labhya. He will get direct service to Vrindavan Nata. But generally we don't hear this name. We hear Vrindavan Ishvari. Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari. Tatta Kanchana Gorangi. Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari. So generally it's among the Gauriyas. It's considered Radha is the queen of Vrindavan. And of course the name Vrindavaneshwari may also pertain to Yashodama as the queen of Nanda Maharaj. So she's, we don't hear her called Maharani. But she's the queen in that sense. When we say Nanda Maharaj, he's a Vaishya, he's not a Raja in that sense. So it's respect, he's the head man among the Vaishyas there. But he also goes to Mathura to offer his respect to the king, Kamsa. So even Kamsa's a big demon, but he still went there to offer all the taxes in the form of milk products. That's what he produces, milk products. So there are Vaishnava holy places, Shaiva holy places, and these and Shakti. These are three most prominent in terms of numbers and fame. The important holy places of India, they're all either Vaishnav, Shaiva, or Shakta. And nowadays we have Shirdi, which is nonsense, but it's considered a holy place. And the wheelchair side, what was the name of his place? Puttapurti or something like that. He also has his place. It seems to me they imitate the Vaishnava cult more, or maybe in the Shirdi, more like Ganesh or something. It's all imagination, anyway. It's Hinduism, it's not Vedic culture. It's a perversion of Vedic culture. Anyway, there are all these holy places. And of course there are Surya temples in Multan, which is now in Pakistan. There was a famous Surya temple which there was an interfaith monologue started by started by members of a certain minority community, and there's no Surya temple there anymore. And also there's an interfaith monologue at Konark, and there's only the remnants of that temple there nowadays. Ganesh worship, not so prominent. If we see the five deities that Shankaracharya, he has started this idea, you worship five gods. So there's Shiva, Shakti, Vishnu, Ganesh, no, not Surya, and who's the last one? Is it Ganapati, his mama? Yeah. But we don't see traditionally big temples of Ganesh. Is there any major temple? It's home worship. And in every temple, there's small, and maybe even you see Radharaman temple. In the Radharaman, when you enter, there's Ganesh is there at the doorway. Sometimes our devotees in ISKCON, they put Nrsimhadev there, but I'm not sure if we should make Nrsimhadev a doorkeeper. That's not very proper. Srila Prabhupada, he objected that at the Yogapit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur, that Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, who became the overseer of, legally the overseer of that property, installed the deity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur just at the gate. And Prabhupada objected. He said, what's this? Your own guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he didn't put the deity there. And you put him right at the gate like he's the gatekeeper. So he didn't approve of that. We should be careful where we place deities. There is a whole Vastu Shastra, which describes how to build temples. And as we see here in South India, when we talk about, just like, for instance, Sri Rangan Temple, there's so many temples all around. Actually, at Tirumala, not like that. There is a Varaha Temple. That's also, people don't know nowadays, you're supposed to take darshan of Varaha before Srinivas. But I don't know if people even know there's Varaha temple. The Varaha was there before Srinivas came. So there may be so many other temples, but there are rules how they're all placed. It's not just willy-nilly. You were telling me the other day how Vedanta Deshika temple came right in front of Tayar, because Tayar, she is very pleased with him, and she wanted, let him be just in front of me. Actually, if you see, that's at the gate also, but inside gate. Both those terms, as you go in through, that's the last gate on the, which side is that? West side. Must be. Isn't it? The Rajagopuram's on the east side. Is it not? South. So it must be north, yeah. North, west, okay. So in the north gate, it's the last gate as you come inside there. But anyway, it's all according to some rules. You just can't, I mean, you can, but you're not supposed to put temples just here, there. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, he established temples in all kinds of buildings in the Western world. Bhaktivedanta Manor, one of the main, is really prestigious building. It's full of ghosts because it used to be a place where old people went to die. Sanatorium, I think that's called. And the first few years we were living there, there's a regular thing that devotees would wake up in the night being attacked by ghosts. But I heard that doesn't happen anymore, probably the ghost got enough prasadam or something and got liberated. And then in London also, the present temple in central London was a bar. And right next to it, there was for many years a gay bar. So in the West, all the rules may not apply. You have to do what you have to do for preaching, but gradually as we bring in all the rules and regulations of Vedic culture, we should see these things and build temples exactly in the way that's given in Shastra. That's the way Krishna likes it. There's arrangement. Vishnu is there in the center. And the way it's arranged in such a way that it resembles his own spiritual abode. It's a facsimile of that. And then all the different demigods, they may be in different places also for worshipping him. So there's a reason for everything. This Devananda Gauriamat in Navadvip, founded by Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj, the whole thing, every little thing, there's some reason why that's there, and it's all very complex. He was personally involved in the design of that. Everything, every little point, it all has some significance, spiritual significance, including the toilet, which is they call the Gyana Kanda. Impersonalism. Yeah. He didn't like impersonalism. He didn't like it at all. He didn't like Mayavad. He's a robust enemy of Mayavad. So there are different kinds of rules and rituals for different kinds of temples. Just like we offer tulsi, when we come to a Vishnu temple, we offer tulsi to the Lord. And in the Shiva temple, we offer bail to the Lord. There are certain flowers that we offer to Vishnu, and certain flowers should not be offered to Vishnu. How about Dhatura flowers? Would anyone like to work? No, we don't offer that. They grow everywhere. They're a little white and look a little bit nice. We don't offer that. And there are certain different flowers that we... Shiva and Shakti, they both like this red hibiscus. Not supposed to be offered to Vishnu. And they're different. In the Vishnu temple, or most time you'll get some kumkum. In the Shiva temple, you'll get some ashes, bhasma. So there are differences, but basically, generically, it's the same kind of thing that you do in every place. You're supposed to go by walking, on the pilgrimage. People used to walk. Nowadays they go by train or bus or mixture, and then they should walk into the holy place. One should observe celibacy. Now, if one's strictly following the Vedic principles, then he only approaches his wife at a certain time in her monthly cycle, at a certain time after her monthly discharge has finished, because that is the time which should be fruitful for producing children. So that's also considered celibacy, if one approaches just at the right time and not any other time. And there are so many rules for that also, during the night time and so many things. So that's also considered celibacy. But even that should not be done if one is going with one's wife on a pilgrimage. Say you're taking 1 month to go. And during that period comes during that time, but you don't do. No, not when you're on a pilgrimage. It's complete brahmacharya one should observe during that period. So there are various rules which one has to follow. Nowadays, hardly the rules are followed. I don't think so. And then we may wonder how much benefit you get from the pilgrimage. People still seem to be getting, maybe the deities are more kind, understanding people's weakness, ignorance, and great need of help, being so weak and so ignorant. There are so many rules that it can't be expected that the ordinary person would know that, and therefore there are Tirtha Purohits who help you when you come. They tell you, do this, do that, and then they'll chant the mantras for you. They'll say, now you say after me, because you're supposed to say the mantra, so they'll say it bit by bit. And they help you in all respects, and they often help you to find a hotel room if it's not booked in advance, as it didn't used to be. There's no booking in advance, and so many things. They help you get prasadam like this. So there are many rules and rituals to follow in every place. Mantras to be chanted, puja to be performed. It may be different. The same mantras for Shiva and for Vishnu, they won't be the same, but the mantras are chanted. Pradakshina mantra, there are various generic mantras, just like we chant daily for Tulsi Devi, Yani Kani Chapapani, not Papani, Papani, Brahmahatyadi Kani Cha, Tani Tani Pranashanti, production, Pade Pade. So that's a generic Pradakshina mantra. Can be said for anyone who's in that category that we do Pradakshina of them, circumambulation, and then they will. One becomes free from sins, even the sin of killing a brahmana. Not encouraging killing brahmanas, but it's making the point that it's so purifying. So that mantra you can say for circumambulating any worshipable person. although there will be specific mantras also. There'll be different motives for why people go on pilgrimage, materialistic, non-materialistic, non-materialistic divided into desire, akama, saravakama, va moksha kama. These are three basic categories. Having saravakama, all kinds of material desires, but usually people go with a specific material desire to be fulfilled on a pilgrimage, or they may desire liberation, or they may have no desire, no personal desire whatsoever. but the desire to please Krishna. In many pilgrimages, there's, especially Vaishnav pilgrimage, there's singing, kirtan. Not only Gauriyas, of course, but in very strongly in the what's that called? Varkala, the Vital Sampradaya, and then we have the Dasakuta of the Madhva Sampradaya. Sri Vaishnavas, if you see village people, they'll sing various kirtans for the Lord with various instruments. That's especially in Vaishnava culture. And Shiva culture, Hara Hara Mahadev, there's something to be called out, calling out to the Lord in hearing. One should actually hear something when one goes on a pilgrimage that Krishna criticized. People who go on pilgrimage and they take the bath to be all in all. Oh, one other kind of prayer, the Ganga, kind of pilgrimage to a river. But we worship the personality of Ganga. People who daily go to the Ganga, or any sacred river, you worship Ganga by Ganga. You will take water and you offer. And there are various rituals to be performed also. But those who come less frequently, they may do some puja with lamps and all this also. Also very common to put a little boat with flowers and a lamp, especially at Haridwar. That's very popular to do that. It's very, very beautiful to worship Ganga in that way. Very nicely at Mayapur now, there's been established a temple of Ganga, and there's a devotee there who has prepared, people can come and offer puja to Ganga. And every evening they have a formal puja to the Ganga in her personal form, her deity form. There, that's a nice thing established by ISKCON Mayapur, the worship of Ganga. Prasad, or before that comes first, darshan. I mean, we don't even think about it because it's so central to going on pilgrimage or going to a temple, darshan. But yeah, one should hear also. I was going to say, Krishna criticized, yeah, tirtha buddhi salalena karhijit. One should hear, that's actually an essential part of the pilgrimage. One should hear the glories of the place. And we find that often in temples, that the pujari will explain how this deity came here and the special boons he gives and this and that. They don't get tired of saying it. Oh, they say it again and again, day after day after day. But they don't become tired. They have a taste, it seems, for glorifying the Lord in that way, as their father did and their grandfather did and their great-great-great and like that. So they're quite happy to serve the Lord like that. So some deities, one should visit the temple when you go to a holy place. I mean, it just seems so obvious. But it's just, if we say, I'm going to Sri Rangam, it means we're going to the Sri Rangam temple and have darshan of Ranganath. It doesn't mean I'm going to go there and have a game of cricket or anything else. One time in Puri, I just arrived there and we visited the little shrine of Shalabega, the famous Muslim devotee of Jagannath. So there are some young men there who are playing Ludo or something like that. We came doing kirtan. And they stood up out of respect. I saw they were respectful, so after we'd offered our respect, did a little production. Do you understand Hindi? Yeah. Okay, so I got on there. What are you doing here? Playing this game in the temple. Why don't you do kirtan with us? You come here every evening and do kirtan. I don't know if they did, but they were respectful enough to agree that that's what they should be doing. Those who live in the Ganga, those who live next to the Ganga don't take bath in Ganga. So it's like they're living in the holy place and they're playing Ludo or some silly game. Pradakshina, yeah, that's a standard thing in holy places also. And we see the Sanctum Sanctorum, the Garbhagriha of the temple, is made in such a way that facilitates doing pradakshina. And generally, around many places on the wall around that, there are pictures or bas relief exhibits of the pastimes of the Lord, the deity there. Just like at Namakkal, we have Hanuman, his different pastimes are in the pradakshina marg. So these are all standard things. Making pradakshina, circumambulation. Pradakshina, how do you call that in Islam? Pravamana or so? You go, they do it around the other way. Everything has to be different. They do circumambulation, but the other way, counterclockwise. The journey itself, it's not that you just go to a holy place, but the journey, it's very much part of the experience, the journey itself, and especially that's true in the days when people used to walk, and still many walk. If you travel around on the roads of India, you'll almost always, if you go for a fairly long drive, you'll always see some religious group of people walking, going somewhere to some temple, especially different seasons are there for walking to certain temples, especially in Gujarat. And if you go, you'll generally see some Jain, more sadhvis than sadhus. It's very common to see the women in their white cloth. They're not Brahma Kumaris, they're Jain sadhvi, and they have this covering over their face so that they don't get coronavirus, so they don't breathe in any insects. You could say maybe the Jains, they shouldn't cover, they should keep it open, because if we say the coronavirus is a living being, then you shouldn't restrict, you should let it out. Right? In Jain philosophy, I don't know how it works. Just a little sarcasm there. So the journey, that's all that one is supposed to observe. Celibacy, tapasya. And the pilgrimage begins when one leaves the house, and even preparing oneself for that mentally, before one starts, one should observe various rituals and celibacy, prepare oneself for that, because it's not that you just go from being stuck at home and then all of a sudden you're in religious consciousness. Actually, if one is following the Vedic way of life, especially if one is Brahmana, whose whole days centers around various rituals and study of Shastra, talking about traditional Brahmanas here, then you may be. But otherwise, one has to prepare oneself. And even pious people, I mean, generally pious people go on pilgrimage, only pious people. They're already in religious consciousness, but even though they do daily puja, visiting temples and this and that, but there is entanglement with home life and all that goes with that. So the one has to prepare to disentangle oneself. And on the journey, mentally to go on pilgrimage means to disentangle oneself from the family affairs, but it's mentally also. So on the journey, one shouldn't, even if one is with the wife and family members, but you don't discuss family matters or social matters. It's supposed to be immersion from the time one starts, and preferably to the time you come back. Nowadays, it may not be all only pious people that go. Just like, for instance, a group of people, maybe a group of office staff are going, let's go for a weekend, where shall we go? Oh, let's go to Mayapur. And it's more like an outing. Let's have a look and see. Where is there to go anyway? Nowadays it's being developed, the Indian equivalent of Disney World and Disneyland and all that kind of thing. We have in Chennai, just near to our temple, this Water World, and they have in North Mumbai also Worli Water World, something like that. But I actually never heard of anyone going there. I guess someone goes there, they're doing some kind of business. But people like to visit temples, and if the temples are made in so attractive that people like to visit also, I mean, even visually attractive, it's not like any ordinary house. So people, but especially with the you can go in a bus and be there in 3 hours or something. The whole consciousness of going on pilgrimage, it may not be so much as it was in previous times. Maybe more for devotees who come from overseas to India to visit Vrindavan and Mayapur, because it's a big endeavor, especially if they have to save up the money, maybe for years to come. It becomes a very big thing. Srila Prabhupada states in Krishna book, giving the example of, well, commenting on Akrura rolling in the dust of Vrindavan when he entered, that this is how one should, when one comes to Vrindavan, one should first roll in the dust. Although we don't see that Srila Prabhupada personally did it or instructed his disciples to do that. But I've been trying to do so for the last few years. But this time coming in, because you have to get inside the parikrama marga, it's hard to find any dust because it's all concrete. And to drive in a bit, and there's the car park at the Jaipuria temple. Otherwise, it's getting hard to, we'll have to save some place where there's a little dust. Sevakunjis, the original Sevakunj is much bigger, but they've walled off an area that you're not supposed to encroach on. So you may have to go right into right to the heart to get some dust. Maybe that Jaipuria car park, they'll put tarmacadam over it, and then they'll be harder to find some dust. It's really unfortunate, isn't it? I mean, the Yamuna, in the Yamuna River, there's no Yamuna water in Vrindavan. The combination of canal water with sewage and industrial effluent. What a disaster. Prabhupada said that the demons are deliberately doing this to discourage people from bathing in the Yamuna. They deliberately want to pollute. Okay, I'll finish. A little late start and a little short. Should finish sweetly, huh? Think of something sweet to say. Krishna is our best friend. He's even the best friend of people who pollute the Yamuna. But they don't know it. It's very, 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 very offensive, actually. All in the name of development of the nation. But it's regress, it's not progress. It's regress in terms of what the whole culture of India stands for, which is spiritual advancement. So it's a regress from that. Most unfortunate. Say something sweet. Krishna is sweet. All right. Hare Krishna. Vanta kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu vyavasa patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo namo namaha.